Welcome to Christchurch Manchester Sermon Podcast. CCM is one church that meets every Sunday in various locations across Manchester. For more information about who we are or about our Sunday meetings, please visit www.christchurchmanchester.com.
We are going to start at the end this morning, and the end is, have salt in yourselves and be at peace with one another. Have salt in yourselves and be at peace with one another. In other words, what you do matters. How you behave matters. It matters for you and it matters for everyone else around you, whether that's the lifestyle you choose to live or the way we talk about other people when they're there and when they're not there, your behavior at work, behavior with family, how you choose to live out your faith, whatever it might be, what you do matters. Now, we kind of us modern Western Europeans like to think that we live with no one affecting us. Like, we decide who we are, what's important to us, what we're going to do, and that's utterly not to do with anyone else. And also, we affect no one. So every decision we make is just for us. It's of no concern to anyone else. That's entirely our own way of life, our own choice. No one else has any influence. And in a funny, contradictory kind of way, we also love the idea of community. But mostly we live to keep ourselves happy. And we see some of the tension in the modern world because we love community, but we're not willing to make the sacrifice for community. Well, actually, today, Jesus gives us a very big picture view of his calling, of what it means to be a follower of him, what it means to be a disciple of him. And really, he is saying what you do matters. Matters for you, matters deeply for others. So we're going to read the end of Mark 9 today, the last kind of 10, 11 verses of Mark as we work our way through. Before we do that, we're going to pick up just one verse in the middle of Mark 9 just to get ourselves a little bit of context, because this is a relatively tricky passage, and so we need to understand what Jesus was saying in the hope that we can understand him properly. And so back earlier in Mark, and Andy talked a bit about this last week, in Mark 30, it says that they were passing through Galilee, and he did not want anyone to know. So Jesus was taking his disciples on a journey through Galilee, then eventually into Judea. And there was nobody else there. And he was saying to them, he said, look, the Son of Man is going to be delivered into the hands of men, and they will kill him. And when he is killed, after 3 days, he will rise. So there are no crowds with Jesus at this point. And Mark, actually, if we remember from 1 to 9, there are crowds everywhere. There's a lot of people watching Jesus, listening to him. But at this point, it's only Jesus and his disciples, maybe just the 12 of them. And he has told them, he said, look, this is what's going to happen. I'm going to be handed over to die. And then after that, I will rise again. And they don't understand. Okay, he's trying to teach them, but they don't get it. So they go to Capernaum, and Jesus asks, okay, as we were going along the road, what were you talking about? So they're on a journey, just Jesus and his disciples. And he says to them, okay, what were you guys talking about back there? And they say, well, we were talking about who's the greatest. Okay, and so Jesus, as Andy explained last week, flips this around and says, look, the greatest will be those of you that are last. The greatest will be those that serve everybody else. Okay, so that's context. And then we're going to read our passage for this morning. Right, Mark 9, 38 to 50. Let's go. It's going to appear up behind me, but if you've got your Bibles, read it. This is a nice testing piece of Jesus teaching for us. And John said to him, teacher, we saw someone casting out demons in your name. Remember, it's just them and the disciples walking along the road together, going through Galilee. Teacher, we saw someone casting out demons in your name. We tried to stop him because he was not following us. But Jesus says, do not stop him, for no one who does a mighty work in my name will be able soon afterward to speak evil of me. For the one who is not against us is for us. For truly I say to you, whoever gives you a cup of water to drink because you belong to Christ will by no means lose his reward. Whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him if a great millstone were hung round his neck and he were thrown into the sea. And if your hand causes you to sin, cut it off. It is better for you to enter life crippled than with two hands to go to hell, to the unquenchable fire. And if your foot causes you to sin, cut it off. It's better for you to enter lame than with 2 feet to be thrown into hell. And if your eye causes you to sin, tear it out. It's better for you to enter the kingdom of God with 1 eye than with 2 eyes to be thrown into hell, where their worm does not die and the fire is not quenched. For everyone will be salted with fire. Salt is good, but if the salt has lost its saltiness, how will you make it salty again? Have salt in yourselves and be at peace with one another. Have salt in yourselves and be at peace with one another. What you do matters. It matters for you. It matters for everyone else around you. And it matters for eternity. So like we've said, there are no crowds here. This is Jesus responding to something John has said, teaching his disciples, helping them to understand. This is not a message for general public. He's not healing, he's not performing miracles, he's not gathering people. This is for him and his disciples. And he's explaining, look, this is what it means to follow me. Okay, this is really what it means to be a disciple. Have salt in yourselves and be at peace. So we're going to think about those two phrases, what it means to have salt in yourself and to be at peace with one another. Because I think Jesus is summarizing his teaching here. And we'll start with peace, okay? Because I think that helps us understand the whole thing. When he says, be at peace with one another. And we've talked about peace a bit at Kingsway before, so we'll just go quick. And what he means by peace, well, the English word doesn't quite really get the magnitude of what peace meant for Jesus and what meant for them at the time in their language. And the word would be shalom. And when we think peace, we just think not fighting or perhaps quiet. That's what we think. Lack of noise, lack of violence. Maybe that's what we think. But it's shalom, the word he uses, means much more. So peace for Jesus would have meant health. So physical wholeness of body, wholeness of life. You do things that are good for you in physically, spiritually, you are healthy. Also, there is harmony. So you would have good relationship between your friends, your family, and between God. There would be prosperity as well. And that wouldn't just really mean financial. It would mean you are thriving, you are being fulfilled, and in life you are flourishing. And also would mean, you know, the absence of conflict, maybe a victory over enemies. So it would mean health, harmony, prosperity, peace. All of that is packed in to that one word when Jesus says, be at peace with one another. So that holistic sense of good relationship and all of those things. And it's a very powerful word. And it's a powerful word that the disciples weren't really living out. Okay, and this is why Jesus is bringing it up. They weren't really living out healthy relationships, harmony. They weren't really prospering and helping others to prosper. And also they weren't avoiding conflict. There was conflict there too. We see when John says, teacher, we saw someone casting out demons in your name and we tried to stop him because he was not following us. We've seen that. We've also seen him arguing about who the greatest is. So they started with who's the greatest, and Jesus says, well, the last of you shall be great. And so they're thinking, okay, fair enough. But it's this little group. We're all going to, you know, not be great and serve each other, but everybody else can't do that. So we're going to stop them, right? We're the special group. Now, John has a little bit of a track record of this kind of behavior. So earlier in Mark, Jesus calls John and his brother James, calls them the Sons of Thunder. Which, Mike, if you're going to start another band, Sons of Thunder, I'm just saying, it's a great name for a band. They're taken, right? Okay. So it was, and he called them that, and it wasn't a compliment to them, actually. It wasn't Jesus being nice with fun nicknames. Actually, he was saying, look, you guys are very quick to talk. You're quite arrogant. And we always know where you are. You're very noisy. And actually, in this little story here, in Luke's version of it, actually, John and James come out even worse. And now in Luke's version of the story, John points out, the same as in Mark, look, there's this guy casting out demons and he's not part of the inner group. And Jesus deals with it the same as he does in Mark. But then the story goes on. Jesus goes to a village and preaches. All the disciples are with him. The village doesn't really change and turn and follow Jesus. So Jesus moves on. And James and John are walking with Jesus and say, look, do you want to call fire down from heaven on that village? Do you want it? We can just see them burnt to a crust because they weren't listening to you. Imagine after our fun day, it doesn't go as well as we'd hoped, and Fallon calls a little prayer meeting together afterwards and say, look, it didn't go as well, so we're going to pray that Burnage burns to the ground. That's what we're going to pray for right now. Actually, it's not a good thing. And it wasn't a good thing for James and John either. And one thing it does prove is that Jesus had a very, very low bar for how you got into his group of disciples. John and James, consistently hot-headed, arrogant, angry, aggressive, violence bubbling under the surface, clearly quite elitist and very self-promoting as well. Jesus had a very low bar for his disciples. But he doesn't leave them there. Actually, he brings them through. And so Jesus taught them, saying, look, actually, peace, this peace you are to have with one another is about my kingdom. It's not about elitism. It's not about a special group. So he says, look, we don't stop. This guy who's praying for people to be freed from oppression and evil, we don't stop him doing that. For no one who does a mighty work in my name will be able to speak evil of me. So John thought, okay, this in crowds, we are the ones that get to minister, the 12, the special 12. We are holy and above everyone else, clearly being quite elitist. And humans, we have a sense to do that, don't we? We're often like to project some sense of specialness, that we are in the special group, the in crowd. If we're at work and there is a popular group, it's quite nice to be in that, and it's not nice to be outside of that. We know that feeling, and perhaps we allow ourselves to get drawn into that. We often fight to preserve it as well. But Jesus actually is against this. He says, look, this is actually about my kingdom. And he says, look, the entry requirement for being part of this is that you do the work in my name. So he says about this person, look, if he's doing it in my name, it's not a problem. It can't be a bad thing. Clearly, this person is good-hearted because he's promoting me, not his own ministry. Which is a bit of a subtle dig saying, actually, what are you guys doing? You disciples clearly want credit here. You wanted to be great earlier on. Now you want to be part of the elite group. Actually, this guy is only doing it in my name. He's only wanting to give me credit. If you want to do great things for Jesus, if you feel like you want to push out and try things in ministry, in praying for people, in whatever it might be, but you're not sure you're good enough, you're not quite sure you're holy enough, maybe, or you may think, oh, these are things I've done in the past, or you maybe think, I'm not in the right crowd, I'm not the sort of person who does those sorts of things. Actually, Jesus' entry requirement is you have a go, and then you give him the credit. That's all there was. So peace for Jesus was about his kingdom, not about the elite, some special group. But peace was also about service and not position. And he says, if we keep reading, for the one who is not against us is for us. For truly I say to you, whoever gives you a cup of water to drink because you belong to Christ will by no means lose his reward. So this is how Jesus was going to beat elitism, beat that kind of sense of the special crowds. And he gives a very humble example, says, look, this is how we can help other believers. He says, if somebody gives you a cup of water, if they give you a cup of water to help you, to serve you, he says, they will not lose their reward, which is a funny way of saying they've done very well. If they give you a cup of water to love you, to serve you, to look after you, actually, think a cup of water, actually, that most people can do that. It's not very hard to do, is it? They haven't done very much. Takes a few seconds, costs you very little. But Jesus is saying this is a good thing to do. And he's going at the cynicism of John and his brother James and perhaps the rest of them as well. And saying, look, even people who just offer you water, who do small things, actually, they're part of my kingdom. And we tend, again, human nature is to love the big gift, don't we? We like the high-performing athletes. It's very exciting. We like the successful business people. We don't necessarily think of the people that do the small things that make that stuff happen. And in church, it's a similar thing. We like the people with the big public speaking gifts, the big worship leaders, perhaps those with some sort of healing ministry or prophetic where there's a bit of razzle-dazzle. But actually, Jesus would point at the person who gives them a cup of water. That's what he's doing at the moment. A few weeks ago, we announced we were moving from Kingsway to Gorton, the Simmons family. And sometimes in church life, it doesn't happen very often, especially in CCM, but sometimes the leader gets a bit of attention and it's a bit odd. It's just a weird thing. And it becomes a bit too much about the leader. And when you change leaders, that's fine. That's what happens. But there in the week, someone texted me and just said, we're praying for you. And that's all it was. Nothing else than that. And actually, it was a really very important thing for me. It was a glass of water. That's all they did. They did a very simple thing, but it was very refreshing. So you might think, okay, well, I want to serve God. But actually, I'm not that gifted. I'm not particularly gifted, or I don't have much to bring particularly, or even I've done things in the past which perhaps prevent me from bringing things. Actually, Jesus points at the person who just brings a cup of water to serve and says, that's good enough. We honour that. Jesus always wants to bring people through. He says, be at peace with one another, to grow as followers of him. And he's teaching his disciples because it's a fundamental in the kingdom. He said, we need to bring people through. So we need to honour those who do the little things. And actually, this is so important to him that he actually starts to use some pretty dramatic, powerful language. And he says, whoever causes one of these little ones who believes in me to sin, it would be better for him if a great millstone were hung round his neck and he was thrown into the sea. Okay, pretty dramatic language, right? Now, when he's talking about little ones, he's not talking about children particularly. He is talking about those that James and John and the disciples are excluding. Where they're saying, we are the elites, we are those that are better, we are above, we are somehow in the inner crowds. Actually, Jesus is saying, look, no, actually, if you cause any of those who are outside to sin, if you cause them to stumble, actually, it's not good for you. And so we'll move on and we'll try and understand this more. He says, have peace with one another, then have salt in yourselves. Okay, so he's saying what you do matters, which we're trying to understand. How you behave matters. It matters for you, it matters for everyone else. And he's aiming this at his disciples, at his followers. And it's important we remember this. This is aimed at his disciples. It's aimed at followers and believers in him, because now it gets a bit tricky. So to have salt in yourself, what does he mean by that? Well, he gives us three pictures to explain what this would look like. The first one is a fiery pit. The second one is cutting off body parts. And the third is a life of sacrifice. There are the three pictures. He says, look, okay, we are to be have peace with one another, have salt in yourself. Why is this important? Well, there's a fiery pit. And you need to cut off body parts and live a life of sacrifice. So let's understand the fiery pit, okay? What does that mean? This fiery pit means God is very serious. And whether we feel comfortable with the idea or the concept or not, God actually judges. He says, verse 45, it is better for you to enter life lame than with two feet to be thrown into hell. It's a pretty big old statement. And he kind of explains what that might look like. A few verses later in 48 he says, where their worm does not die and the fire is not quenched. Now our understanding of this is very much affected by the Reformation arts and heavy metal album covers and all of those sorts of things. So let's think about hell for a minute. Welcome to Christchurch, Manchester. Let's think about hell for a moment. And the word he uses here is, basically he's naming a place just on the edge of Jerusalem, called the Valley of Hinnom, which is a deep ravine on the edge of Jerusalem that has a very, very colourful history that went back hundreds and hundreds of years before Jesus was speaking. And in this ravine, a few kings of Israel burned children as sacrifice to idols. Okay, and they had these priests there, and the priests had to drum while they were doing it so you couldn't hear the screams of the children. A few kings did that. And then Jeremiah the prophet, he prophesied that this has angered God so much that he's going to allow the Babylonians to overrun Israel. And they will burn the bodies of many Israelites in this valley on the edge of Jerusalem. So this is a place with a very colourful history. And in Jesus' day, this valley was still there. And it was now a rubbish tip, where they would throw from Jerusalem all of their rubbish, but also dead bodies would get thrown there as well. And they kept the fire burning there to burn all of this rubbish off. This place is that we know where it is. You could go there. You could take a picnic and you could have lunch in hell. It's there. It's a place you can go. So Jesus is, and all of his listeners would have understood this place, okay? And it is a very extreme picture. And he wants his disciples to hear this and understand the importance of what you do matters. They were being elitist, argumentative, bubbling violence underneath the surface, getting rid of people who disagreed with them. And Jesus is concerned by this, and he doesn't want this in his church. So he outlines, look, there is big consequences for this, for how we build this kingdom. And the second picture, which will help us to understand, even more, is of cutting off body parts. So there is this fiery pit. Okay, there is some judgment there. And the second one is, there is this cutting off body parts. So the first one is, God is serious. The second one is, we must be serious as well. So cutting off hands or feet or gouging out eyes obviously is a literal thing. He wasn't expecting them to actually do it. But he's saying, look, if your sin, if your behaviour in life drives people away from me, from Jesus, then shouldn't we take dramatic measures to bring change? And it is dramatic language, cutting off hands and feet and eyes. Actually, hands, feet and eyes are very important to us in life, aren't they? To lose one of those would be very costly. To lose a foot would make life really quite difficult. It would make it hard for you, maybe even uncomfortable. And he's saying, look, actually, to follow me is a costly thing. It means actually maybe cutting things out of your life that might be important to you in order to serve other people. Maybe stopping yourself from looking at stuff or going to places or behaving in certain ways so that you can help other people come into the kingdom of God. So his disciples, this group of 12 that were sat there, actually, Jesus' plan was that they would advance the kingdom. When he went back to heaven, they would advance the kingdom of God. That 12 was then 120 at the beginning of Acts. And Jesus' plan was that they would spread out into Jerusalem, then out into the wider countryside, then out into Europe and into Asia. And from there to us, even today. That was clearly his intention. And so he's wanting them to understand, look, this is actually a very serious call to live lives of radical obedience to him, to move a kingdom forward that brings people in, doesn't prevent people from coming in. Actually, it's so serious, it means we have to cut anything out which limits this. Jesus seems, I think, to link our behaviour, our lifestyle choices, the things we talk about, look at, the places that we go, and particularly in this context, that sense of arrogance, elitism, the competitiveness that the disciples were bringing through, all of those things need to be cut out. And finally, the final picture is that of sacrifice, a life of sacrifice, which is a life of worship. So he says, everyone will be salted with fire, which is quite an odd phrase and actually isn't used in many other places at all in the Gospels. But really, this is the language of the temple. In the temple, fire consumed the sacrifices that the people of God bought to offer up. And salt was used in these sacrifices and was consumed as well. And Jesus is saying, look, following me is all consuming. It's about everything. It's not about the small, some bits that we want to give to him and other bits that we don't. And we easily compartmentalise our life, don't we? And we can make a big deal of the things we offer up to Jesus and keep very quiet about the things we hold back to ourselves, don't we? But Jesus is saying, look, everyone will be salted with fire. I want what you have. I want all of what you have. That's why he says, look, have salt in yourself and be at peace with one another. What you do matters. How you behave matters. It matters for you, having salt in yourself. It matters for your own eternal journey. And it matters for everyone else around you. We have a great opportunity to bring people into his kingdom. And when he's been talking about salt, being salted with fire and this temple picture, he's also talking about what's going to happen to him very soon after this. He is going to be offered up as sacrifice. He's going to be offered up so that we can actually be brought into this kingdom. So that actually it should become easy for those on the outside to come into the middle. Have salt in yourselves and be at peace with one another.